Chapter 13. Regaining consciousness, for me, was the sort of thing where you fall into bed outrageously drunk, the bed starts spinning, and you snap awake because you're gonna hurl the contents of your stomach onto the bed. Oh, right, sure, that's never happened to you. Liar. Anyway, in this case, I awoke while I was puking into my own lap, or trying to. Some chunks hung briefly in the air as the artificial gravity was off, then on, then off again. The intermittent zero-G was making my stomach flutter. I clamped my mouth shut so if I puked again, I wouldn't spew it all over the bridge. And a headache. My head throbbed so bad it felt like my eyeballs would explode. Skippy, I heard myself saying in a strangled voice. Sit rep, was all I could manage to say at that moment. We have jumped past the edge of the star system. All 5 Theranan destroyers were engulfed by the solar flare. There are no ships pursuing us currently. Artificial gravity has stabilized temporarily. There are numerous injuries to the crew. Nothing serious. He didn't explain his definition of a serious injury. Damage to the ship is substantial. How bad is it? I was afraid to hear the answer. Extremely, catastrophically bad. Shut up and let me talk for a minute. Skippy's voice was flat, none of the usual snarkiness. Only reactors 1 and 5 are online. I have initiated an emergency shutdown of reactor 5 because it's losing containment. As it is, the leak will result in additional damage to reactor 3, which is already shut down. Reactor 1 has a slight loss of containment. The major problem with 1 is that it has almost completely lost cooling capacity. Temperatures are in the red, and if they continue to increase, and they will, there will be a catastrophic explosion that could destroy the aft part of the ship, including the remaining jump drives. Reactor 1's coolant pump is making a sound like if you put a pack of hyenas in a blender, only louder. Therefore, I am shutting down Reactor 1 also. The problem is a pump? Seems simple to me. Can you fix it? I called the 1-800 helpline for the pump manufacturer. They transferred me to some guy named Bob in Malaysia. The monsoon rain was pounding on his roof so bad I could barely hear him. He asked me to verify the pump was plugged in, then he suggested I turn it off and back on again. That didn't help. Also, I'm pretty sure Bob is not his real name, Skippy added quietly. Joe, for crying out loud, if I could fix the pump, don't you think I would have done it already? The pump isn't the only problem. The whole cooling system got peppered with shrapnel from a near miss. The ship will completely lose power, I started to ask. I requested you to shut up while I'm talking, like that was ever going to happen. He sounded tired. Correct. After the last 2 reactors shut down, the ship will have only backup power from the capacitors. There is enough charge in the jump drive coils for 1 more moderate jump. Unfortunately, such a jump will not get us to the next closest star system, and we clearly can't go back to where we were. I expect the Theranan will detect our current position within 2 hours. The gamma ray burst when we jumped in could not be masked, and as we are on the periphery of their star system, this area is highly likely to be within their sensor coverage. The Theranan now know one of their own star carriers is hostile. They will be calling in reinforcements. Colonel, you may now speak. The situation can't be entirely hopeless, or you wouldn't have bothered to shut down the reactors. What are our options? By options, I meant other than engaging the self-destruct. We have 1 option. Well, 2, if you include self-destructing the ship. We use the remaining charge in the jump drive to leave this position as soon as possible. I am running a diagnostic on the jump drive coils now to avoid rupturing the drive during a jump. Our jumps while we were within the dampening field and then within my warpage of space-time caused severe damage to the drive coils. Only 27% of the drive coils can be trusted to function properly at this point. Jumping to the middle of interstellar space, with all the reactors dead and the capacitors draining, sounds like going from the fire into the frying pan. We're dead either way. Can the reactors be fixed? The short answer is no. Not with the equipment on board. Star carriers travel with a host of support vessels and are not designed to sustain themselves for long-term operations. Spare parts and the ability to manufacture replacement parts are in short supply. The long answer is shmaybe. Shmaybe? I asked, surprised. This was the old Skippy I knew. Something short of a confident maybe. Given enough time and raw materials, the ship might be restored to functioning. I have a plan. You are not going to like it. Skippy was right. I didn't like it. I also didn't have a choice, or a better idea. Not having anything useful to do on the bridge, in a ship with no power, I helped clean up the mess. I talked to the crew briefly on the intercom and headed off to the sick bay. Not surprisingly, none of the special forces were there, although the injury report Skippy loaded onto my iPad listed several broken bones, concussions, and soft tissue injuries like dislocated shoulders among our Spec Ops super soldiers. They were taking care of each other and remaining alert, as if they needed to be ready to repel boarders or some crazy stuff like that. They would report to the sick bay when I gave them an all-clear signal. Maybe they simply needed to feel useful. I could understand that. I felt pretty useless myself at that moment. Chang had the con, such as it was, and the duty crew in the CIC was monitoring our malfunctioning sensor field in case the Theranin had an extra ship out there somewhere. Right now, even a Kristang dropship could have shot holes in us. There were three of the science team in sickbay. One wrist sprain, one broken nose and bloody forehead combination, plus one broken leg. Dr. Skippy, the mad scientist, was taking care of them with his scary-looking robots. The science team heard my brief status report over the intercom and naturally had many questions. I had few answers. What I should have done is walk around the ship reassuring people. Instead, I took a brief break to splash water on my face and flush the puke taste out of my mouth. In the cramped Theranin bathroom, kneeling on the floor to reach the sink, I addressed Skippy, trying to talk to him the way I normally did. Keep the fear out of my voice. All right, Skippy. I have to give you props. Even your stupid plans work great. Sure, that's what happened. I'm a freaking genius. My spidey sense tingled. He wasn't fooling me for a second. You lying little jerk. Truth, Skippy. The truth shall set you free. I never understood that expression. Lying is so much easier, Joe. Now, Skippy. Well, here's the thing, he said, in his nervous tone that was the reason he could never successfully lie to me. My original stupid plan was truly pure genius. The Theranin would never have expected us to try anything that stupid. After I created that solar flare, much bigger even than I had hoped, by the way, I didn't have much data on that star, and I had to estimate the composition of its photosphere. Get to the point, please, Skippy. My headache was killing me. After I triggered the solar flare, my plan was to distort space-time in reverse, to flatten it enough right around the ship that we could jump away. I knew the Theranin ships had no chance to escape. The gravity waves propagated at the speed of light, and those ships were too deep in the gravity well to jump away. The problem was, I'd never before flattened space-time to that extent so deep in a gravity well. It was theoretically possible. However, I didn't have the math for it. I had to guess, go in on blind faith. That was the stupid part. Okay, stupid, but hey, it worked. We're alive, mostly. You want the truth, Joe? It didn't work, not entirely. Not the way I planned it, Skippy admitted sadly. The flattening space-time part, I mean. I couldn't make it hold long enough to get the ship all the way through the jump. The gravity waves made space-time resonate in a way I couldn't predict, and I didn't have time to create a model and test it. I failed. I totally failed. Then how are we still alive? You monkeys would describe it as luck. The gravity waves on this end of the wormhole caused a resonance in space-time that made the wormhole fail as we entered it. The presence of the ship inside the wormhole made the resonance increase exponentially. The laws of physics here are an annoying pain most of the time, but in this case they saved our asses. Because the ship had already emerged from the far end of the wormhole before we entered it on the near end, it would have violated causality for the ship to be destroyed while in transit. The universe doesn't allow causality to be messed with in that way, so it collapsed all the probabilities, except for the extremely unlikely one where we somehow survived the transit and emerged safely on the far end. It's kind of like sending a message via internet protocol. The message gets chopped up into bits that take different routes to the destination, then it is reassembled. That's why you were nauseous, and now you have a headache. Your body was ripped apart at the subatomic level and reassembled many times. What you experienced, the ship seeming to blink in and out of existence, actually happened. Every time the ship was destroyed in transit, the universe hit the reset button and restored us to existence, because it had to. I shook my head in stunned disbelief. Wait, we died, except we didn't? Correct. Because we hadn't died on the far end of the wormhole, we couldn't die on the near end, or in transit. Whoa. Whoa indeed. Joe, this is a tiny, tiny glimpse into how the universe truly works. Awesome. We can figure out the rest from here, huh? That would be a resounding no. Let me give you an example. A dog sees you bring a new bag of kibble into the house. The dog may see you getting the bag of kibble out of the car. You can even take the dog to the pet store with you, and the dog can see you take the bag of kibble off the shelf there. That does not mean the dog grasps the concept of where kibble really comes from, or the concept of, well, concepts. Thank you for the big vote of confidence in us monkeys. I'm being realistic here, Joe. Your smartest theoretical physicists are still only staring at the garage door thinking that is the magical source of endless kibble. I wasn't going to argue with an AI about the merits of monkey brain power. Let's keep this luck part between us, agreed? The crew needs to have confidence in you, misplaced as it is. I looked at myself in the mirror, a mirror we humans had installed since the Renan cyborgs had thought such things were foolish. Most of the vomit was off my uniform or mashed enough into the digital camo pattern that it looked as if it belonged there. My face looked like hell. I needed sleep, as if that was going to happen anytime soon. Unbelievable. I was alive only because the future me on the other end of the wormhole hadn't died. A thought occurred to me. Wait, what did you say about the version of the Dutchman that came out of the wormhole? What did you mean, version? That's not something I can tell to monkeys. Shouldn't have mentioned it. Fine. I got a whopping headache anyway. What's next? We made one last jump using remaining power in the jump drive capacitors. Then we jumped again, and again, and again. Power for the jumps, and almost everything else aboard the Dutchman, came directly from Skippy. He pulled power from some other space-time, or from quantum bubbles, or from magical fairy dust, or some crazy shit like that. I didn't understand it, and our science team, despite nodding their heads in deep thought, had no freaking clue what Skippy was doing either. The problem with Skippy powering the ship is whatever source he pulled power from was enormous, like a small star, and he wasn't able to regulate the power flow very well because he wasn't designed to do that. The result of him pulling in way too much power was that we kept blowing systems all over the ship. Relays burned out, capacitors melted, anything related to electricity had a short lifespan, and it was a race against time. Could Skippy get us to our destination before we blew every circuit in the ship? To reduce power needs, we had no stealth field. Shields were at minimum power to protect us only against microscopic impacts from space debris, and life support, like heat, lights, and oxygen recycling, were cut back. Some parts of the ship were evacuated, so we could entirely cut power to those areas. Artificial gravity was lowered to 18%, that system's most efficient power setting other than being switched off. I wasn't ready for zero-G yet. 18 people were living aboard the Flower, because that ship had plenty of power. Although that little ship was pushing its limits to supply fresh oxygen and expel waste heat from 18 living, breathing humans. The Flower had detached from its docking platform, and was now grappled directly onto the Dutchman's spine frame. We'd moved the little ship closer so it could supply partial power to its mother ship. That hadn't worked well. Skippy had to jury-rig power transfer cables, and the two ships' systems were incompatible. Conditions aboard the Flower were not only cramped, people there were living in the zero-G because the Kristang didn't have artificial gravity technology. Our special forces saw this as an opportunity for zero-G combat training. That was a good idea, and it kept people busy and focused. We all needed to keep busy, to keep our minds off our dilemma. Our destination was a marginally habitable planet, or more accurately, a planet Skippy thought might be habitable, in that it supposedly had an oxygen atmosphere and temperatures within a range humans could survive. His information was sketchy. He got it third hand from the Theranin, who got it from the Kristang, who got it from the Ruhar. The planet had been in Ruhar territory before the recent wormhole shift. No Ruhar lived there, which wasn't encouraging for us. The planet was now in Kristang territory, and apparently no lizards wanted to live there either. Also not encouraging. The reason we had to abandon ship was that Skippy needed to repair it, rebuild it from the junk pile it had become. We were going to leave the Flying Dutchman in orbit around a giant gas planet, with Skippy remaining aboard by himself. He was going to mine the planet's numerous moons for raw materials, and mine the gas giant's atmosphere for reactor fuel. While Skippy was rebuilding the ship, it would be torn apart and unable to support life. Could Skippy essentially build us a new ship from nothing much more than moon dust and toxic gases? To the crew, he was supremely, arrogantly confident. To me, in private, not so much. "I won't know until I get under the hood," he told me. "Could be expensive. You got insurance on this thing, right? Might want to think about a rental car." When a car mechanic talked to me like that, he probably needed to make a payment on his boat. "Be serious for a minute, Skippy. Can you fix the ship?" "That's not a yes or no question, Joe. Let's see if I can dumb this down enough for you. I don't have enough data now. The question is whether my repair effort will consume resources faster than I can create new ones, and I won't know that until I scan what raw materials are available. If I don't find critical elements quickly or it takes too much energy to process the raw materials, then I'm on a downward spiral. Joe, I simply do not know. The only data I have on this system is a vague report that Kristang got from a Ruha computer when they captured Paradise. The Ruha only cared whether the system held a habitable planet. Data on the other planets is very thin. I'm guessing. We don't have another survivable option in range." "Oh," I said. "About that rental car." The Flying Dutchman limped into orbit around the gas giant, an orbit that was barely adequate for Skippy's needs. The bottom of the orbit dipped too close to the cloud tops, while the other end of the orbit swung inconveniently far away. With the ship completely drained of all but emergency power, there was no energy to spare for altering the Dutchman's orbit. Skippy said he could live with it. The first thing Skippy did was listen for any sign of other ships in the star system, and he didn't find anything. If there was a ship, it was silent and stealth, and we couldn't do anything about it. Any ship that had been in the system long-term, even stealthed, would have left a trail of exhaust and other gases. Skippy didn't see anything like that, and there didn't seem to be any point for a ship to be stealthed so far inside Theran and Kristang territory. Next, he checked out the second planet from the star, the place we humans would be living while Skippy pimped our ride by himself. At that moment, the second planet was on the other side of the star system, only a couple of weeks from swinging completely behind the star.
"Sir," Adams asked while we were all still reading through Skippy's data, "what do we call the planet?"
"Which one?" I asked. "The one we'll be living on or this gas giant?" "Oh, duh, the one we'll be living on, of course." Nobody cared about Skippy's gas station, which was all the giant planet meant to us, a source of helium-3. According to Skippy's preliminary data, the second planet in the system, the only one that could support human life, was only marginally habitable, and that was the good news. Its orbit was elliptical rather than round, so each year it swung far away from the star, then much closer. The planet's funky orbit took it close to the outer edge, then inside the middle of the Goldilocks zone, where it was not too hot and not too cold for life. The planet was frozen most of its year, with only part of the surface along the equator thawing as it swung closer to the star. Another piece of good news is the planet was approaching the summer part of its orbit. It should become marginally warmer while we live there. Oxygen levels in the habitable area were low, equivalent to 10,000 feet elevation on Earth, while gravity was 14% stronger than Earth normal. And because we were on a stolen Theranin ship, the artificial gravity aboard the Dutchman was normally set at 83% of Earth normal. At my request, Skippy had been able to goose up the gravity to 87% of Earth normal. Still, setting down on the planet would be a 31% increase over the gravity we'd gotten used to aboard the ship. And since the battle, gravity aboard the ship had been much lower. The sudden increase in weight was going to be tough. Life there, when not covered under snow and ice, consisted of simple grasses, moss, and lichen, the type of plants you would find in the tundra of Canada or Siberia. Skippy detected substantially more life in the oceans than on the land, but most of the oceans were covered by ice, just like the land. The place was chilly, heavy, and hard to breathe. Definitely not paradise.
"It's cold." "We could call it Hoth," William suggested.
"Hoth?" I asked. "Why's that?"
"Hoth. You know, the ice planet, where the rebels had their base and the Empire Strikes Back. Star Wars." Oh, yeah. I remembered now. No, we're not calling it Hoth. Sounds too much like Hot. This planet is a crappy place. Nobody wants to be there. We're only going there because we have to, and we're leaving as soon as we can. Seeger snorted from the pilot seat.
Sounds like Newark.
Newark? I asked.
You ever fly through Newark?
Seeger shrugged.
Lots of people go through Newark, but no one wants to be there.
Adams and I shared an amused look.
I like it, Adams said.
Racking my brain, I tried to remember whether any of our merry band of pirates was from Newark, or New Jersey in general.
Well, what the hell, why not? Newark it is.
Uh-oh.
Damn, Skippy said. Joe, we have a major complication. There is a group of Kristang on the planet.
What?
My heart sank.
The Dutchman was dead. We couldn't live on the ship while it was being repaired. We couldn't live on a planet occupied by Kristang either. There was no other option.
We came all this way for nothing?
What the hell are they doing there?
Wait, I'm still processing the data. This may not be a total disaster.
It is a small group. They do not have a ship with them. The data I have comes from the two small satellites they have in orbit. I think... It appears they are a small group, around 30, that were landed there to search for remains of an elder ship crash.
That certainly sounds familiar, huh?
They have one base, and only two, maybe three aircraft. They stay close to the main crash site. They're not warriors, they're scavengers. Joe, I think you can land on another part of the planet and remain concealed. Their satellites I can hack into and filter data the satellites transmit, so the Kristang will not know you are there.
Concealing the presence of 70 humans is going to be one hell of a magic trick, Skippy.
Hey, they don't call me Skippy the Magnificent for nothing.
Nobody calls you Skippy the Magnificent.
He sniffed.
Well, they should.
We will need a closer look at these Kristang. That can be part of the Flowers recon mission. I am now scanning this planet's moons to determine whether the proper raw materials to repair the ship are available in sufficient quantity.
Great. Send what you have to our science team. I'm going to talk to them. They'd want to show their findings to me anyway.
Sergeant Adams, you have the, since there was nothing to con aboard a dead ship, the chair.
On my way to the ship's science lab, which was only an empty cargo bay that held tables covered with computers and all sorts of scientific instruments, I stopped to talk with Major Sims. She was organizing the effort to identify and pack up everything we needed to survive for months on the ice planet. I needed to remember to call it Newark. She was beyond busy, helping her sort through a mountain of gear with the British SAS team and the Chinese Night Tiger Special Forces. The Brits and Chinese worked well together. Their commanders got along well. So at Lieutenant Colonel Chang's suggestion, I assigned them to officially be a team.
Major Sims, how's it going?
Busy, sir, she said, in a tone that implied my dropping by to ask stupid questions was anything but helpful.
She tapped her iPad. Everyone was studying their tablets intently.
We just received the preliminary data on the planet. We're really going to call it Newark?
She didn't wait for an answer.
The gravity and low oxygen levels we can simply deal with.
The Chinese and British team leaders nodded stoically.
The cold we'll have to plan for. Daytime high temperatures can be briefly pleasant in the peak of summer, almost 18 degrees.
For a moment I was startled until I realized she was talking about temperatures in Celsius and I had to mentally convert to Fahrenheit. That was, around 65 degrees.
Pleasant. That isn't the norm, she warned. During winter this place has snow even at the equator.
You heard about the Kristang there? I asked.
Just it, she nodded, and the Special Forces looked grim. Until you tell me otherwise, sir, I'm preparing to evacuate us to Newark.
Carry on. I didn't know what else to say at the moment because I didn't know what to do about the Kristang either. A small group on the surface without a space-capable ship would be an easy target for even the Flower's meager weapons load. I needed to balance the convenience of eliminating a minor threat with the greater threat of a Kristang ship arriving to pick up the scavengers and finding them all dead from orbital strikes. Such a ship would scan the surface intently and inevitably find us, and they might even find the Dutchman. I needed to think long and hard about our options. My options. It would be my decision. I was the commander.
Crap.
I realized with a shock that somehow I had become that upper echelon asshole who made dumbass decisions and made people's life miserable.
When I was a private, then a specialist, and then a sergeant, I hated those dumbasses, and now I was one. The entire science team, including the three walking wounded, were gathered in their lab, talking excitedly. Bishop, Dr. Venkman called me over, almost referring to me by the nickname Skippy used. Mr. Skippy just reported that this planet and its moons are adequate for repairing the ship. He asked me to tell you that he has found sufficient quantities of raw materials, including the critical elements vanadium, rhenium, and bismuth.
Great. I was super self-conscious of my ignorance in a room full of certified geniuses. What are those?
Vanadium and rhenium are transition metals.
She could tell by the blank look on my face that I had absolutely no idea what she was talking about.
They are valuable metals. We do not yet understand why they are needed in large quantities to repair the ship. As to bismuth,
she made an exaggerated shrug. Isn't that, I guessed, used in Pepto-Bismol? Like when you have an upset stomach?
Bismuth subsalicylate, yes.
She shook her head.
We do not know why it would be useful here. On Earth, it is often used as a less toxic substitute for lead. Bismuth is a post-transition metal that is the most diamagnetic element.
She paused, sparing me further embarrassment.
It is apparently good news, anyway.
That is good news, yeah, I agreed. Skippy could fix the ship with the materials at hand. That was one less thing to worry about. We still had that other major problem. You may not have heard yet. There is a group of Kristang on the planet. We're calling the planet Newark.
We just heard about the Kristang, she said, glancing at her tablet. What are we going to do about them, Colonel?
She couldn't keep the anxiety out of her voice. I could sympathize with her. The science team knew they were completely reliant on the military to deal with the Kristang. All they could do was analyze the scientific crumbs Skippy threw their way and hope the Dutchman's crew kept them safe. We are considering options, Dr. Venkman. Skippy is still analyzing the data. We'll be sending the flower out to recon the planet and assess the threat the Kristang posed to us. Unspoken was that one of our options was self-destructing the ship. I didn't like that one. Back on the bridge, I was looking at the sensor data on my iPad. Those Kristang could be a major show-stopping problem. And it occurred to me right then we might have another huge problem. Skippy, during the battle, our stealth field was down? Over in the CIC, I could see people nodding yes, slowly, in answer to my question. After the first hit, yes, Skippy answered. It was partially down because I had to divert power to the shields. This is what I'd been afraid of. The Theranan now are aware that one of their own star carriers is hostile. Yes, however, I must point out, I altered our jump drive signature to make us appear to be that star carrier that disappeared 17 years ago, as we discussed. Great. Excellent. One less thing for me to worry about. Chang looked puzzled.
What star carrier?
Damn it. I should have told people about that. It had slipped my mind. That's what happens when I have late-night conversations with Skippy. I'll explain later. It is some good news. Sims looked at me pointedly, unhappy that there was something I hadn't told my command crew.
We can use some good news now.
Sir? There was a distinct pause before she'd added the sir. She'd made her point. People needed me to explain right then. I turned the chair to face the CIC. There was a Theranan star carrier, very similar to the Dutchman, that disappeared 17 years ago. The Theranan think the Kristang stole it. Skippy altered our jump drive signatures so the Dutchman appears to be that missing ship instead of this ship that mysteriously disappeared near Paradise where humans are living. Hopefully this will throw the Theranan suspicions away from humans and onto the Kristang. It should keep them chasing ghosts for a while. Skippy, no way the Theranan know there are humans aboard this ship. No way, Joe. In order for the Theranan to know that, they would have to get close enough to actively scan this ship with their stealth field deactivated, and that never happened. Your secret is still safe, Joe. The slow, clumsy way this ship flew and reacted during the battle would lead the Theranan to suspect this ship is being flown by a lower-tech species. However, as we discussed, the Theranan will suspect the Kristang. There is no reason they would consider humans as being involved in any way. Skippy paused.
Captain Desai, I did not mean to disparage your piloting abilities.
I understood what you meant, Mr. Skippy, Desai responded.
She had done her best to keep the Dutchman out of the line of fire during the battle.
Still, the ship had been struck by maser beams many more times than it would have had Theranin cyborgs been in command. From the expression on the faces of people in the CIC, including Chang and Sims, the crew was not happy about me neglecting to mention that I had inquired about whether our star carrier was unique enough to be immediately identifiable. They were right to be upset. I should have told them. I thought of another problem and zoomed out on the main bridge display. Newark is on the other side of the star now, right? Not completely. Close enough. Yes. How are we going to talk when we're down there and you're way up here? There will be a time lag of, what, an hour? Light will take around an hour to travel one way, yes, and the problem will grow worse as Newark's orbit takes it further away. I shook my head. That is unsat. Isn't there some sort of Skippy magic you can do to speed up our communications? What if you get stuck in a crossword puzzle and you need my help? Like if the clue is feline, three letters, and starts with C and A? Yeah, see? I can tell you the answer is not pussy like you were thinking. I caught a glance from Sims and the CIC when I made that remark. Damn it. This is why I like to have conversations with Skippy in private, so I didn't have to watch what I was saying. Also, so people couldn't hear him insult me frequently. If either of us is thinking about pussy, it's not me, Joey. And to be serious, yes, there is Skippy magic I will be using. I'm going to create a micro wormhole we can use to communicate through. One end of the wormhole will be with me, the other end of the wormhole will be in geosynchronous orbit around Newark. For your benefit, Joe, that means I know what a geosynchronous orbit is, Skippy. On Earth, it means the satellite is parked 22,500 miles above the equator, so it is always at the same place in the sky as the Earth rotates. That's because at that altitude, the satellite is moving at the same speed as the Earth's equator rotates. Silence. He got me worried. Skippy? Hello?
Sorry, you just completely blew my mind for a minute. How do you know that?
Feeling mildly insulted, I explained.
A guy tried to sell my parents a satellite TV system, and I had to explain to them why the pizza box dish antenna needs to point low in the southern sky, like over Brazil. I looked it up on Wikipedia.
Is all your scientific knowledge based on internet articles?
No, Skippy, of course not. I also used to watch the Discovery Channel.
There is no hope for your species, he said sadly.
You monkeys should surrender to the cockroaches immediately and get it over with. You, for one, should welcome your new cockroach overlords.
Hey, cockroaches may eat stuffed crust pizza, but did they invent stuffed crust pizza? I don't think so.
Stuffed crust pizza, Skippy said slowly. Your species' single contribution to galactic culture.
You forgot fantasy sports, Skippy.
I rest my case.
Great. This micro-wormhole dingus means we'll be in constant communication, then?
Not quite. Even Skippy magic can screw with the laws of physics in this space-time only so much. On my own, I can't project a wormhole that far, and a jump breaks the connection between wormholes, so the flower can't carry the wormhole for me. I have modified a missile to carry the other end of the wormhole. As soon as it is ready, I will launch it toward Newark. The missile will take 5 days to get there because I have to save more than half its fuel to slow down once it gets there, to maneuver the wormhole into orbit. The missile will launch before the flower returns, however, for your first several days on the surface there will be a major time lag in our communications. It is vital that during those days you make an exceptional effort to avoid doing anything stupid.
Hey, no worries, Skippy, it's me.
Exactly what I'm afraid of.